Okay, this is an interview with Yolanda Barrera for the Grape Strike and Boycott film. Yolanda, let's start with growing up in Porterville and how you spent your fun summers. I know you enjoyed working in the fields, but it was really, on some levels, it was a difficult experience. Talk about how difficult it was.
Well, it was more fun than difficult at that time because I was 13, 14. At that time, you're not looking at the future. You're not looking at what you're going to do with your life. You're just looking at day to day. And it was fun because I was going to see other kids that I had seen the previous summer. I was going to see Colorado. Other people who travel and follow the crops the way we were doing. So in a sense, it was the end of school meant fun. We were going to go to a labor camp. We were going to go meet up with our friends that we hadn't seen for a year. Most of the time, there was no email then. So most of the time, we had not been in contact with them. So it was more fun than not. But I guess if I have to talk about the negative part, it would be that we weren't in our own house. In Porterville, we had a one-bedroom house with plants growing in our bedroom, but it was our house and we were comfortable and we had some furniture. In the labor camps, there was no furniture. You had to make your bed. You had to put a bunch of boxes together and throw a blanket on top. There was no table. You had to take crates and just convert it into a table. That was a little bit difficult, even for someone like myself and my family. We were poor, but we weren't so poor that we had to sleep on the ground like we did in the labor camp. So that was a bit difficult. The other thing that was hard was working very long hours. When you're living in the labor camps, we were working pretty much all day. It was not unusual for us to work at least 12 hours a day. And so that was difficult. It wasn't something we were used to. This was very hard work. When I say 12 hours, I'm not talking about working in an office or something. I'm talking about working on the tomato harvesting machines where you are active for the entire 12 hours. You get about 10 minutes for lunch. Sometimes the only breaks we got was when the tomato harvesting machine broke down. They would get sometimes too many rocks and clods of dirt would get in and the machine would break down. And we would say, thank God, we get a break now. That was hard. And I think the hardest part for me as a 13, 14-year-old was what it did to me personally. And of course, keeping in mind 13, 14-year-olds are very concerned about the way they look. It would mess up my nails. My nails would get yellow from picking the various crops. My knees would get bruised from being on my knees and working, like picking plums, for example. So I was more concerned about those kinds of things in terms of it being difficult. But as a 13, 14-year-old, you're not thinking about your future. You're not thinking about whether you're going to have enough to eat. You're not an adult. So for us, for me, it was mostly fun traveling up and down the state and following the crops. And I couldn't understand when my father said one day, we're not going to do that anymore. And I cried for a week because my father didn't want us to leave Porterville anymore because he felt we were missing school and education was just so important to him and he wanted us to stay.
Well, a 12 or a 13-year-old kid in the fields, yeah. Let me just mention one thing to you, which is that we're only going to use your answers. So if I say, how's the weather? And you say, nice, I can't use that. But if you say, the weather is nice, I can use
okay.
That. How's that for cross-examination? But talk about how hard the work is, and you know, there's a 13-year-old has to work just like an adult. There's no difference. There's no water. There's no bathrooms. Talk about some of those things.
It was very difficult working in the fields for a 13, 14-year-old because of the conditions of the field. For example, there were no bathrooms. There was no water. We would take our own water. We would take a bottle of water, for example. It would get hot, and there was no place to eat. So at lunchtime, we'd get maybe 15 minutes to eat. We had our tacos that we had made at home. They're cold. I've always hated, to this day, I hate cold food. I will not eat sandwiches because they're cold. And it reminds me of working in the fields. We didn't have time to build a fire. If we would have had time, we could have built a fire and heated up our tacos, our burritos, but we didn't have that kind of time. So that was difficult. If you, for some reason, needed to go to the bathroom, you had to ask your prima, your cousin, your brother, well, not a brother for me, but my sister, to go with me. And we'd go far enough away from where all the other workers were and hide behind a tree and take care of your necessities. And that was largely embarrassing. Everyone knew why you were walking away with two people. And it was difficult, especially for, I think, a young lady at that age. Things embarrass you a lot more than when you're an adult. It was also difficult, like I said, the drinking of the water. Sometimes, if we were lucky, they would have like a container of water, but they would have one dipper, and everyone had a drink. And it was cold. The water was cold, so we wanted to drink that water. They would actually have ice in it. But it was one dipper. Everybody used the same dipper. And again, for a 13, 14-year-old, I was just not into drinking out of a glass or a dipper that everyone in the field had used. And you have to keep in mind, we're working in dirt. After about an hour and a half, our whole body is covered in dirt, sweat, pesticides. We don't look like people when we leave the fields. We are covered in white material, which is actually the pesticides. And our hands are, if we're picking tomatoes, sometimes they're overly ripe. As we grab them, our fingers would get into them, and we'd feel that the juice all over our hands, and then we get the dirt. So that part of it was unpleasant, and it was very difficult to do that kind of work. If we were picking oranges, I mean, every crop is different. If we're picking oranges, what was difficult there was, here I am, a 13, 14-year-old, trying to pass myself off as an 18-year-old, because if I'm not an older person, I can't have a ladder. And if you get a ladder from the contractor, you can make more money. So everyone pretends that they're older, but 13, 14-year-old carrying a very heavy wooden ladder is not a really good idea. And it hurts your back, hurts your shoulders. By the end of the day, you're exhausted. You've been working all day. You're carrying the heavy ladder, placing it on the tree, climbing up this ladder, and then picking the oranges. And oftentimes, if you're not very careful, which I wasn't, you fall off of the ladder. And I was always fortunate. I never broke anything. But there were many, many times when I had to grab onto a limb, many times when I fell. And if you're lucky and you can grab onto a limb and not fall, then now it's embarrassing because you have to call out to someone else, like, Dad, can you come and put the ladder up for me so I can get down? And it's exciting in many ways to work in the field, but certainly it is very, very hard for a child. It is hard for a 13, 14-year-old, and it's hard for a young lady. And the other thing that I think was difficult for me is the knowledge that we needed to work. I think when I was working at age 10, I was just working because my parents asked me to. But by the time I was 13, 14, I understood why I had to work. I understood that if I didn't go with my parents to work, they wouldn't have enough money to survive. And that impact of knowing that I had to help my family survive or we were not going to have enough food, is something that I think psychologically is very difficult for a child or a teenager to handle.
It sort of makes you grow up a little too fast, doesn't it? Giving you responsibilities that a teenager wouldn't normally have.
It does make you grow up fast, and I'm not sure that that's a bad thing. I think I felt the impact more because I was the oldest in the family, and my parents being Mexican, always stressed that I was the oldest. I had to set an example. So that put a little bit more of a burden on me to go to work every day with them in the summer, for example, during the school year, work on the weekends. Because if I refused, then my siblings were going to refuse. And so I had a little bit more pressure. And I knew that we all needed to work. So I would try to use a lot of psychology on, like, I had a younger sister who was 5 years younger than me, and she was such a good orange picker. And I wanted her to go because my father would say, anyone who doesn't want to go to work, you don't have to go. You can stay home if you want. And then, of course, he'd say, but I guess if somebody doesn't go, we're going to have to work longer hours because we have our quota to meet. And so my father would say, today we are going to make, for example, five bins of oranges were the huge boxes. And it would pretty much take all day to do that. And we got paid $5 per bin. So I knew if my younger sister didn't go with us, we would be there an extra hour, hour and a half. So I would tell my sister, why don't you go with us? And she'd say, oh, Dad said I didn't have to go if I didn't want to. And I'd say, yeah, but, you know, I would start to use psychology. And I'd say, look, if you go, you only have to pick oranges in the shade. I'll stay in the sun because it gets really hot in the sun. And I'd say, I'll pick the whole top and the middle of the tree, and you only have to pick in the bottom of the tree. And any oranges that are left in there, I will climb up to them in the middle of the tree, because there's always some oranges that are left there, and they'll send you back. The contractor would send us back. And so you actually have to climb the tree, not on the ladder anymore, just climb the tree and go and get those oranges. And I would tell her, I will do that. You don't have to do that. And I would keep working on until eventually to say, okay, I'll go. And then she would turn to my dad, but only five bins and I'm stopping. So we would go and pick oranges, and we'd get to the five bins, and we were good pickers. So we would finish early, and then my dad would say, well, why don't we do just one more? And my sister would sit down and say, oh, no, you said five bins. We've done five bins. I'm not working. And she would sit down and no longer work, and the rest of us had to stay and complete the six bins, whatever it was. My point is, she was so young that for her, she was going to be with her older sister. She wanted to be with me. I was going and convincing her to go because I understood how significant, how important it was for the family survival for her to go, even though she didn't realize it at the time.
You know, talking about falling off the trees, farm labor is really dangerous, and it's especially a dangerous situation when there's small kids in the field, isn't it? Talk a little
it
bit
is.
About that.
When we first came from Texas, my youngest brother was 5 years old, and my mother had no money to leave him at a child care center, for example. It made no sense to hire someone to take care of him, so she had to take him. My youngest sister, she was 5 years old. It wasn't my brother. So she had to go to work in the field with my parents.
Can you start that over again? Yeah.
From the beginning, because there was a plane.
When I came from
okay.
Texas.
Okay. Texas, start over. Okay.
Are we okay now?
We're good now.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead and start over again.
Yes. When my family came from Texas, that was in 1961, my youngest sister was 5 years old. My brother and I were able to go to school. My sister couldn't go to school because school was in session. This was in March. And so she had to go with my parents. And so at age five, she was having to help them pick oranges. And the reason was she just thought she was helping my parents. But the reason was my mom wanted to be able to keep an eye on her and make sure that nothing happened to her. Much later, I had a brother who was born. And since he was able to walk, my parents took him to the fields. And they would actually put him in a box, like an orange crate, so that he wouldn't wander off. Because there were many accidents in the fields. Our next door neighbor, they had a child about the same age as my brother. And he was about a year and a half old. And he wandered off, and he got run over by a tractor in the field. His head was smashed. Those kinds of things were not that unusual. They would happen. And it would devastate the family. Like that particular incident of our next door neighbors, we went to the Rosario. His father, this was our neighbor, he wanted to jump into the grave of his son. And I think it wasn't until later that I realized why he was as devastated as he was. And I think he felt responsible because he had taken his child with him. Injuries like that of kids getting killed were commonplace. Other injuries, broken legs, broken arms, happened all the time. At a minimum, one day of going out there, you were going to come home with scratches and bruises all over your body. That's just a given. That's the nature of the job. That's the nature of the work that you're doing. You're climbing trees. You're falling off. And you're having to hurry, because if you don't hurry, you don't make enough money to survive. And that's what it is. It's a struggle to survive on a day-to-day basis. And the other thing is, you have to make a little bit of extra money, because when the winter comes, it starts to rain, and you can't work anymore. So as a farm worker, it's tough, because you have to survive it on a day-to-day basis, and you have to make a little bit of extra money to survive the winter months.
Let's move ahead a year or so. When something starts to change in Porterville, some organizers are beginning to stir things up, and you first hear about the union. Talk about that period.
That was a very exciting period of time, although we didn't realize it at the time. My father met a man named Jim Drake, who was working with the migrant ministry. And Jim Drake was attempting to gather a group of people who were interested in self-help housing. That didn't work out for reasons that are unrelated to this discussion. But what ended up happening is Jim Drake suggested that because all of the individuals who were interested in the self-help housing were farm workers, that maybe they should talk to this man named Cesar Chavez, who was the head of the National Farm Workers Association, which is what it was called before being called the UFWOC. UFWOC did not exist. So all of the workers met with him and talked to him about what it was that he was trying to do. And this was early on. This was way before the pilgrimage from Delano to Sacramento. And all of the workers agreed that they would follow him. And I say that they would follow him because that's how they saw it. They saw him as a dreamer. They saw him as someone who had a vision of the future for farm workers, a time when there could be some protections, some guarantees for the farm workers. And their hearts went out to him, heart and soul, and they said they would follow him wherever he went. And they were totally dedicated and committed to him to follow his instructions, to do whatever he told them to do, because they believed in him and they believed in his vision. And so what ended up happening is that my father was designated to be the local organizer for Porterville. He was designated by Cesar Chavez. And so my father's job was basically, I say job, but he wasn't paid for that. He was a volunteer. But his job was basically to recruit other individuals who were interested in joining the union, to get them to pay their dues, to have fundraisers, send the money to Delano, and to educate people with respect to the union. And later on, his role became even more significant because, as I'm sure most people know, there Cesar decided to have a pilgrimage from Delano to Sacramento to go to the Capitol and to let the governor know, Governor Brown, know of the horrible working conditions of the farm workers. And so there was this march, it's been called the March Pilgrimage, that started in Delano. Porterville is very close to Delano. I believe it's 25 miles. So the marchers left Delano and camped first in a little town prior to getting to Porterville, where no one received the strikers. No one there was willing to go out of their way to help them in any way. So the Porterville people, we felt bad that no one had received them. We wanted to encourage them. So a bunch of the people in Porterville got together. We got pan dulce, we got burritos, we got coffee, whatever we could scrounge up. And we drove to this little town. It's called Ducor. And we went to Ducor. All of them were camped out in a field. There was one person there who said, you can sleep in my yard, basically. And so we took them coffee, we took them food, and we had a big old party singing and dancing out there. The next day, they marched into Porterville, and we had a lot of people waiting for them. And my father and my two uncles, who are, they're just ad hoc musicians. They play at parties, things like that. They're not professional musicians. My father was playing the accordion. One of my uncles was playing the drum, a little snare drum, and my other uncle was playing the guitar, and they greeted them in at the entrance to Porterville. And my father had organized the entire city and the whole event. We went to try to get a parade permit. We were denied that, and we were told that if we insisted on marching, we would all end up in jail. Everybody said, fine, we will end up in jail. We are going to support Cesar Chavez. And we greeted them at the entrance. We marched down Main Street, and we marched into a park, and the speeches were there. And there were individuals in Porterville. My father had organized everyone was going to take some people to their homes. We took six people to our home to sleep there. We didn't have beds for everyone, and it meant the rest of us all had to sleep on the floor, but they had a roof over their heads, and that was the important thing. And I've talked to a lot of the people since who were in that march, and they talk about walking into Porterville and how encouraging it was to see so many people backing them up and supporting them and giving of themselves and their homes and their food, whatever little they could share with them, they shared it with them. And so that was certainly a very exciting time. And that was, in a sense, I guess you could say the kickoff in terms of more people joining the union after that, because of the publicity, because of what Cesar Chavez was able to accomplish. He, even with that march, he was able to tell people, if we set our minds to doing something, we can do it. Look what we did. I mean, who would have thought someone, farm workers, leaving their jobs, marching all the way to Sacramento, to that, who would have thought someone could really do that? And they did it. And as they, the more they marched, the more support that they garnered. So those were certainly very exciting times in Porterville. After that, it was, I got even more involved in organizing the teenagers, basically, and the high school students, the even if they weren't in school, because at that time, many of the Chicanos or the Hispanics in the area were not going to school. Dropout rate was exceptionally high, even higher than it is these days. And so I started a youth organization, and we did work in the community. We worked with farm workers, and we had our fundraisers and sent our money in to help the strikers in Delano as well.
So tell me, that moment when they entered Porterville, you're there waiting, you're marching with them or you're waiting for them. What did that feel like to you? How did you feel?
Interesting.
When they arrived at Porterville.
Okay. When they arrived, when the strikers arrived in Porterville, I was in the crowd, but my father didn't know I was there, because I was working in the office that was run by the migrant ministry. And because we had not gotten a parade permit, my father didn't want me to get arrested. And he gave me strict instructions to stay in the office until everything was over. But being my father's daughter, I ignored him, and I was in the crowd. I just was not up in the front where he could see me. And so he didn't realize that I was in the group until we got to the park. And by then I told him, I told you nothing was going to happen. They couldn't possibly arrest all of us. And which is what I told him, because I was the one that had been calling City Hall to try to get the parade permit and was unable to get it. They refused. And I just took the position that the jail is not big enough to arrest all of us. And I told my dad, nothing's going to happen. Even though I'm an attorney now, at that time, of course, I was not an attorney, but everyone used to call me attorney, joking around. You know, they would say, ahí viene la abogada, there comes the attorney, because I would argue for everything. I was the one that people came to and said, we're having problems at school with the teachers. And I would say, I'll go talk to them. And it was just something that I really enjoyed, being able to do something for the community, being able to help someone in whichever way that I could.
So when they arrived in Porterville, did you understand immediately that this was something bigger than you thought it was, that something
no.
really important was going to happen?
When they came into Porterville, it was fun. It was exciting. It was scary because we didn't know if we'd get arrested. It was fun because the people who were marching were a lot of fun to be with. A lot of them were people from the Teatro Campesino, and they were always singing, and they were always happy, and it was a happy time. But it certainly was not something that at the time that I thought, this is going to go down in history books. This is such a momentous occasion. This is going to change my life. I was 14 years old, 15 years old. It was not something that I considered a significant milestone in my life or in the life of a farm worker. At the time, when you're that age, you don't consider what's going to happen in the future. You don't consider how a particular event, something that you do, can have these major consequences in the future of anybody's life.
Can we stop?
Yeah,
just
sure. By the way, Vicente, you know the gel slipped on the window?
Yeah.
Do you want to stop for a second?
Yeah.
This is going.